Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate
vasudevaya. So we're reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 5. Chapter 14, text 46. So we'll just do the word for word. Anyone who?
Idam, this.
Bhagavata, by exalted devotees.
Saptajita.
Greatly worshipped.
Abhadatta,
pure.
Guna,
whose qualities.
Karmanaha,
and activities.
Rajarishe,
of the great saintly king.
Bhadatasya,
of Bharat Maharaj.
Anucharitam,
the narration.
Svasti
Ajanam,
abode of auspiciousness.
Ayushyam,
which increases one's duration of life.
Danyam,
increases one's fortune.
Yashyasyam,
bestows reputation.
Svarga,
Gives promotion to the higher planetary systems,
the goal of all karmis.
Upavargyam,
gives liberation from the material world
and enables one to merge into the supreme,
the goal of the jnanis.
Va,
or
Anushniti,
always hears,
following the path of devotional service.
Agyashati,
describes for the benefit of others.
Abhinandati,
glorifies the characteristics of the devotees
and the Supreme Lord.
Cha,
and
Sarva,
all.
Eva,
certainly.
Asishya,
blessings.
Atmanaha,
for himself.
Asate,
he achieves.
Na,
not.
Kanchana,
anything.
Parata,
from anyone else.
Iti,
thus. So, translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. The devotees interested in hearing and chanting Shravanam Kirtanam regularly discuss the pure characteristics of Bharat Maharaj and praise his activities. If one submissively hears and chants about the all-auspicious Maharaj Bharata, one's lifespan and material opulences certainly increase. One can become very famous and easily attain promotion to the heavenly planets, or attain liberation by merging into the existence of the Lord. Whatever one desires can be obtained simply by hearing, chanting, and glorifying the activities of Maharaj Bharata. In this way, one can fulfill all material and spiritual desires. One does not have to ask anyone else for these things, for simply by studying the life of Maharaj Bharata, one can attain all desirable things. Purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. So hold on to your hat. This is a really good purport. The forest of material existence is summarized in this 14th chapter. The word bhavatavi refers to the path of material existence. The merchant is the living entity who comes to the forest of material existence to try and make money for sense gratification. The six plunderers are the senses, the eyes, the ears, the nose, the tongue, touch and mind. The bad leader is diverted intelligence. Intelligence is meant for Krishna consciousness, but due to material existence, we divert all our intelligence to achieve material facilities. Everything belongs to Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but due to our perverted mind and senses, we plunder the property of the Lord and engage in satisfying our senses. The jackals and the tigers in the forest are our family members, and the herbs and the creepers are our material desires. Thank you. The mountain cave is our happy home, and the mosquitoes and serpents are our enemies. The rats, beasts, and vultures are different types of thieves who take away our possessions. And the Gandharva Pura is the phantasmagoria of the body and the home. The will of the wisp is our attraction for gold and its colour. Material residence and wealth are the ingredients of our material enjoyment. The whirlwind is our attraction for our wife, and the dust storm is the blinding passion experienced during sex. The demigods control the different directions, and the cricket is the harsh words spoken by our enemies during our absence. The owl is the person who directly insults us, and the impious trees are our impious men. The waterless rivers represent the atheists who give us trouble in this world and in the next. The meat-eating demons are the government officials, and the pricking thorns are the impediments of material life. The little taste experience in sex is our desire to enjoy. The little taste experience in in sex is our desire to enjoy another's wife, and the flies are the guardians of women, like the husband, father-in-law, mother-in-law, and so on. The creeper itself is women in general. The lion is the wheel of time. And the herons and crows and vultures are so-called demigods, pseudo-swamis, yogis, and incarnations. All of these are too insignificant to give one relief. The swans are the perfect brahmanas, and the monkeys are the extravagant sudras engaged in eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. The trees of the monkeys are our households, and the elephant is the ultimate death. Thus, all the constituents of material existence are described in this chapter. Thus ends the Bhaktivedanta purport of the fifth canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, fourth chapter, entitled The Material World as the Great Forest of Enjoyment. Hare Krishna. Om Agyana Timuranda Sriyaganandjana Shalakaya Chakshura Militam Nena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Shri Krishna Jaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Sarasvati Gaura Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So this is one hell of a purport. It's a summary of the material world. And for a communications officer, this is a purport that we would like to footnote. Because in some aspects, it's just not politically correct, but Prabhupada is sending out a message, and so we have to give that message. But from a communications point of view, we've often talked about this, that sometimes these sort of purports, if it's in the hands of someone that has never had anything to do with Krishna consciousness, it could be a little disturbing. So a little footnote is quite possible. Now, the summary that's given by Srila Prabhupada may be considered a little bit pessimistic about the material world. And perhaps it's a healthy pessimism. I recently got a new car to do my service as communications officer. And one of the things that the car has got is autocorrect. Do you know what autocorrect is? That means if you're on a path and you deviate a little bit, say you're a little bit spaced out and you go off the lines, then it goes beep, 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 and puts you back into the line, so you go in a straight line. When I first got the car, I was pretty freaked out because the car is sort of doing its own thing, you know. So, in a sense, the information that we're given through the Srimad Bhagavatam is a bit like autocorrect for us. You know, we may drift off the path every now and again. And so the Shastras, the scriptures, the Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, put us back on path. And it's a little like the warning bell. Beep, 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 go back. So this was an exceptionally relevant part of the Srimad Bhagavatam to correct us if we have some deviant, if we're deviating a little bit from the path of Krishna consciousness. So we know Srila Prabhupada. Prabhupada wasn't pessimistic. In fact, he was incredibly realistic about life. And he was also very much an optimist. He had great hope for the future of this planet. And he had great hope while he was physically here of the growth of Krishna consciousness. So Prabhupada was really an amazing personality who didn't have really a negative and pessimistic outlook on life. He was very joyful. And sometimes when you hear about, how are you, Mataji? How are you? When you hear different pastimes of Prabhupada, he was very positive in his progress in Krishna consciousness. So it's very positive at this time to have a look at the world as it is. And what Prabhupada is describing in this purport is very relevant, because the world is not a very pleasant place. It's a place of both pain and suffering, and happiness and distress. And if you have a pendulum, there's more pain at the moment than there is pleasure. And all of us can attest to that with this coronavirus. Someone just has to look at the news and it's just tragedy right across the world. So, the Bhagavad Gita sometimes, you know, when you're dealing with people and they've read Bhagavad Gita, sometimes they say, oh, it's such a pessimistic book. But actually, there is a level of pure pessimism about this material world, but then at the end of it, the finale of it all is not pessimistic at all, because there is a very optimistic message that actually, if you follow this path of Bhagavad Gita, it will lead you to the final goal, which is no more anxiety, going back home, back to Godhead, and never having to suffer in this material world again. So that's the conclusion of Bhagavad Gita, to go back home. Now, even if a person in this material world is very optimistic, nothing compares to the optimism that is felt by a devotee understanding that at the end of this life, if one follows the path enunciated by one's spiritual master, they will go back home, back to Godhead, and have that connection with God. God, Krishna, a personality that loves you more than you can ever imagine. This is our optimism, to be able to have that understanding that I'm going back home, back to Godhead, with Krishna, who loves me immensely. So Gita doesn't teach that we reject this material world completely, but that we utilize this material world to harmonize this world with the spiritual world. So we utilize everything in this material world as a service to Krishna, and that will ultimately, when we do that properly, that will ultimately lead us to the spiritual world. So this forest of material existence is summarized here by Srila Prabhupada. And for the gross materialist, these different descriptions are very apt for them. According to the three modes of nature of which they're captured in, perhaps these descriptions describe exactly how they are. And maybe they also describe how we were before we came to Krishna consciousness. Or even perhaps some of these points are perhaps still relevant for some of us as we're struggling in this material world. So what I was hoping to do, instead of just leaving it at that, and as a summary of this whole chapter, I was thinking, okay, let's go just a little bit deeper in those points that Srila Prabhupada has pointed out. So if you'll let me, we'll take on that role and go deeper into these different points that Prabhupada has made in this very, very succinct and very important purport. So firstly, Prabhupada says, the merchant is the living entity who comes to the forest of material existence to try and make money for sense gratification. So, okay, imagine this is the materialist. And the answers and the reactions to the points that are summarized here. So it's a gross materialist. So materialists will think, all I want is a facility to enjoy myself. When it comes to this material world, all I want is a facility to enjoy myself. The more enjoyment I can get, the better it is for me. That's a materialist. It's me. It's my consciousness. I want to enjoy. So then the purport goes on to say, the six plunderers are the senses, the eyes, the ears, the nose, the tongue, and touch, and mind. Again, the materialist will say, I will use all my capacities to enjoy myself. See, whatever I want, whatever kind of depravity, I want to enjoy it. No censorship. I want to listen to all sorts of music and listen to all sorts of talks, etc., that enliven me, that stimulate me, and make me feel good about who I am. I will smell what I like to smell, even if it's the smell of a dead carcass on a barbecue or wherever. You know, sometimes as devotees we have to go past some of these places and they're cooking the most abominable stuff and it smells so horrible. But to a materialist, it smells absolutely delicious. I will taste anything I like. No rules. The tongue is never satisfied. Let me touch anything I like. Even if it destroys another life, it doesn't matter. I'll touch whatever I want. And finally, let my mind and intelligence run wild, thinking of ways in which I can enjoy myself. Second part, Srila Prabhupada's purport says, intelligence is meant for Krishna consciousness, but due to material existence, we divert all our intelligence to achieve material facilities. Everything belongs to Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but due to our perverted mind and senses, we plunder the property of the Lord and engage in satisfying our own senses. So this is a fundamental point Prabhupada is making here, that we may enter this material world, but actually nothing belongs to us. Everything belongs to Krishna. The Prabhupada continues, the jackals and tigers in the forest are our family members. So some of us may read this and think, yeah, but my family is really nice, they're okay. But actually, the gross materialist, and again we're taking this point from a gross materialist, and there are different levels, as I explained, through the different modes of material nature, but the gross materialist will think, our family members in this life are the all in all. Very prestigious. My family is very important. In our lives, an attachment to them is uncontrolled, and that attachment to them is ultimately the thing that's going to destroy us, because so often we see in society where families fight with one another over wealth and status. And there's also this pride in our family. My son is better than your son. My daughter is better than your daughter. Or they'll do anything to stop one's progress in spiritual life. You know, like if a son or a daughter attempts to make a direction towards spiritual life, then the parents and the family oppose that. I think all of us, especially in the early days of Krishna consciousness, our parents were very much against us joining a spiritual movement and would do anything to stop us joining a spiritual movement, joining Krishna consciousness. There's actually one interesting little cartoon. You may have seen this cartoon. And it's a father and mother coming to the bedroom of a devotee boy. And they have all the drugs and the pornography and everything. And they're going to their son. Here, son, go back to taking drugs and looking at pornography. And come back to the family. He's a devotee, you know. So they're happy if the guy takes on illicit sexual activities again and taking drugs and intoxication. Better that than being a devotee, just to be part of the family. And next, Prabhupada points out, and the herbs and creepers are our material desires. Our desires hang on us lifetime after lifetime, sticking to our very being. So, you know, sometimes you've got these creepers that stick on plants, on walls, and on fences and everything. So that's our desires. They're so hard to pull out. These weeds of desire are so hard to pull out. And sometimes they dwell deep within us. And sometimes we don't even realize it, you know, that we have these desires. And then all of a sudden some latent desire pops up and you think, where the heck did that come from? You know, I didn't know I still had that desire, but they're there. So we have to root them out as we're doing our Krishna consciousness. You know, when we have our Bhakti Lata, the devotional plant, there are the creepers, that the weeds that go alongside, and we have to be attentive that we pick out those weeds every time. The Prabhupada continues, the mountain cave is our happy home. So this is the great Australian dream, to have a home of your own. And a home of your own now means that you have to come up with $1 million. So that's a mortgage for the rest of your life. Practically speaking, you can't get a house for under $500,000. And if you really want a really nice house, it's over $1 million. So that would mean great, huge effort to make a mortgage, to get your mortgage, locking your person in for a lifetime. Then you have your wonderful house, and you've scrimped and saved for it, and all of a sudden you're in the wrong neighbourhood. The neighbours are atrocious. They make loud noises at night time. They have a dog that barks continuously. So there you are. You're sitting in your beautiful new home, which you're paying off every week with your mortgage, but all of a sudden it's hellish. And then what to do? Then what to speak of? You know, we recently hear in the news, the last couple of days, there were floods and wind. You know, nature actually turns on a person, and so many houses were destroyed. So much property was destroyed. And you see on the news, people desperate, oh, my house is completely destroyed, everything is destroyed. So there you go, that's the way the material world is. You know, you may think that you're comfortable one minute, and then the next minute it's all taken away. So that's our mountain cave. Next, Prabhupada says, and the mosquitoes and serpents are our enemies. Mosquitoes and serpents. So we have enemies actually everywhere. And they'll try for the materials. We have enemies everywhere, and they'll try and take what you have and suck you dry. They'll take everything that you got and they'll suck you dry. Like, say for example, for a materialist working for someone, the boss, if you have a very gross boss, they'll do anything to get the most out of you for the least amount of pay. And we notice that this is happening, and even during this COVID-19 situation, where people are now working from home, and believe it or not, people are working harder by working at home than they would if they went to the office. And there's checks and balances on to see how much work they're actually doing. So the bosses are actually really happy with COVID-19 because they're getting more productive work out of their employees and they're having to pay less. So somehow or other they're sucking you dry. There hasn't been a wage increase for ages, and everybody likes that. All the employers like that. So these are the enemies. You have enemies in that area. Rats and beasts and vultures and different types of thieves who take away our possessions. So we know about that. You know, there are rip-off merchants everywhere in the world that will somehow or other think of ways, how can I scam this person to actually take their money away from them, take their possessions away from them. We see it in false advertising. If you buy this car, you'll be so satisfied. It is the best thing. And believe it or not, you know, every time they do, the greatest power of advertising is to put a very good looking member of the opposite sex with that product that they're trying to sell. And when they do that, then straight away a person thinks, well, if I buy that car, I'm also going to get an opportunity to meet someone like this beautiful girl or handsome man. It's false advertising. And there's fast money schemes on investment. You know, people will come to you and say, look, you just have to invest a little bit of money in this and you'll make so much. So there's false investment schemes. There's also subliminal advertising, which has been banned. Technically, it's been banned. So subliminal advertising is when you're watching a commercial or something, but in the background, there's this hypnotic sort of chant going, you have to buy this product, you have to buy this product, you have to buy this product, and you're not aware that that's happening. So this was banned some time ago by all the governments around the world, but believe it or not, in subtle ways, they're still doing that. So these are our rats and beasts and vultures who try and take away our possessions, anything to get us to do that. The next one Prabhupada said is the Gandharva Pura, the phantasmagoria of body and home. So Gandharva Pura, the phantasmagoria, the promise of something really far out. So that was, in our society, we see that in films, You know, we space out in a film, oh, let's go to the movies, because then all of a sudden you're removed from this material environment and you're living the life of James Bond or, you know, some other person, and you see yourself in that sort of a role. That's phantasmagoria, a relief for a little while. And then also there are different things, like at the moment they have those, what do they call those things you put on your face?
Yeah.
Huh?
Virtual reality
machines. Huge. And you put that in and you actually drift off into another world completely. 360 degrees, you're just in another world, but you never are, you're always here. But they're using that. So these are all things to alter the mind into thinking everything is okay. And what to speak of drugs. Intoxications. You know, you can have the hard drugs and you can have the not so hard drugs like alcohol. But everything is just there to actually completely put you in a phantasmagoria state. Oh, I'm so happy now, I'm as drunk as a skunk and I can do whatever I want and I'm now liberated. You know, there's an interesting thing. Yes, recently I got asked by a university student who's doing a master's degree in different religions. And she asked me, Bhakta, have you heard of Dudism? Has anybody here heard of Dudism? Dudism is a new religion. You know what a dude is, don't you? Hey man, it's a dude, right? So Dudism is one of the fastest growing religions in the United States. And have you heard of Dudism? No? Okay. Dudism is that you can wear your pajamas all day and a dressing gown. You don't have to dress up because we don't care. It's the we don't care attitude. We don't care about life. We don't care about how we look. We don't care about anything. We're just cool, dude. We just do what we want to do. And so it's this whole aspect of do what you want to do, be what you want to be. Yeah, you know? And they walk around in their pajamas and their dressing gowns, and that's all they do. They don't care about being clean. They don't care about anything. And that gives them some sort of state of happiness. So this is, again, it's phantasmagoria. The final one that we all know about is sport. To get out of this material world, we actually absorb ourselves in the sport. We identify with cricket professionals. See how he's doing that? Yeah, I could have been that, you know. Or football. Football is such a big thing. They identify with a particular team. And they become fanatic about it. And they go into a phantasmagoria state that I am part of that team. By me yelling and screaming over the fence, I'm actually helping them win their game. So this is phantasmagoria. So we see that. So that's Gandhava Pura. Phantasmagoria of the body and home. The next one Prabhupada mentions. The will of the wisp is our attraction. For gold and its colour and material residence and wealth are the ingredients of our material enjoyment. So the desire for wealth is there in the gross materialist. He wants and she wants money. Give me money. That's all I want. And so jewelry and opulence and money is not just to have it in. Some people just want it and know that they've got it. But other people want to flaunt it. So they buy expensive jewelry and they flash it around, they work it around. They buy a Lamborghini and look at me, I'm driving a Lamborghini or Maserati, you know. And they just really, that to them is the ultimate in life. Will of the wisp attraction. So, because ultimately the Lamborghini will break down, the jewellery will be stolen from you somehow or another, and then you have to protect it and so on. So it's all just to show off. It's all just to say, look at me, aren't I important? I'm very rich. I'm so wealthy. Swift bank accounts and so on and so forth. So this is really that will-of-the-wisp attraction. Because it's all temporary. The whirlpool. This is an interesting. The whirlwind is our attraction for our wife or husband. Politically correct, it is the whirlpool is our attraction for our wife or husband. Both ways it goes. Caught up in the delusion of lust. You know? Unending desire for gratification. Oh, I have my husband, I have my wife. My partner is my possession. She's mine, he's mine. All mine, I can enjoy whatever I want with that person. This is the gross materialist. The next one is, Prabhupada says, the dust storm is our blinding passion experienced during sex. Blinding passion experienced during sex. So sex life is the thing that really binds all of us to this material world. That pleasure of sexual enjoyment, a fleeting few seconds of pleasure, and once it's over and depleted, it's unsatisfied. You're unsatisfied. It's a whole build-up, and then you have a little bit of pleasure, and then it's like, well, that wasn't so crash hot after all that. And then the materialist thinks, next time it'll be better. And then I'll make arrangements for different things. And the mind goes berserk in thinking, how can I enjoy sex life a little differently so I can enjoy it even more? And so this is again that push of the material energy. The dust storm, blinding passion. You become blind. You're blind by it. Next one is, well, even in the sense of wanting a better, the whole thing of contraception. You know, having a sex life without any ramifications. The world is rife with sex at the moment. It's just such a hotbed. Everything, if you're not having sex, it's just not. What's wrong with you? So this is the material world. Prabhupada then goes on to describe the demigods control the different directions. The promise of things beyond our grasp. There are so many things. So-called heavenly delights. The promise of heavenly pleasures. And we see this also in this material world. You know, there's so much terrorist activities going on under the false premise of thinking, somehow or other, by me performing this terrorist act, I'm going to enjoy a heavenly delight. So many virgins will be there for me in the kingdom of heaven. This is such a complete misunderstanding of spiritual life. But that's going on. So the demigods control the different directions. A cricket is harsh words spoken by our enemies during our absence. And who hasn't experienced that? As the gross materialist is completely frightened about people gossiping about them. What are they saying about me? You know? What do they think of me? I have to protect my image. It can't be squandered. You know, like at the moment, there's a gentleman who has been awarded the VC medal for bravery in alms. What's his name? I can't think of his name. But anyway, He's a fighter, he was an army soldier, and now his reputation is being sullied because people are talking about him behind his back, how he actually didn't deserve the Victoria Cross for his military action, and that he was actually quite a horrible person in that the gossip is that he killed people, prisoners unnecessarily, and he also was really unsupportive of his the men that were under him. So again, this gossip is a major thing in society. What are they saying about me? I'm the only person that is really important, and anything that I do, everyone else should do. You know, what I do is really what everybody else should do. So next one Prabhupada mentions is the owl, is the person who directly insults us. So who actually really just directly insults us? You know, somebody comes up to me or to anybody or the gross materialist and says, you're a nonsense. You're nothing here. You're absolutely hopeless. Just an insult. Inside that materialist says, well, they don't really know me. I'm really not like that. How dare they insult me like this? The next one is the impious trees are impious men. Allowing oneself to be led away by low-class individuals. The gross materialist allows themselves to be dragged away by low-class individuals, influenced by negative association. It's really interesting, you know, that how important association is. Recently, I've started to regularly listen to and watch Remembrances of Srila Prabhupada. Does anybody see that on YouTube? That is so important for us to watch. You know, yes, we read Prabhupada's purports in the Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita. We can also listen to lectures. Now, Guru Maharaj is also giving wonderful lectures, just like, you know, Devamrita Maharaj was giving such wonderful lectures while he was here. But the other thing is that by watching these remembrances of Srila Prabhupada, you're associating with the Vaishnavas that have had that personal contact with Prabhupada. And when you hear them speak, it's actually, you in your mind's eye, you can visualize how Prabhupada is reacting to those individuals. And then you see a completely different side of Srila Prabhupada. You know, how merciful he was, how gentle he was. You know, when you see him in the class, it's like he's doing the class. Just like here, we heard the purport here. He's very powerful. But when you hear the interrelationships between the early devotees and Srila Prabhupada, he was so sweet, so completely considerate and loving. So when you hear those remembrances, you're actually filled with that understanding of Prabhupada as well. That, and you're actually having that association with Srila Prabhupada in that different way. So that I find that really helpful in developing a close relationship with Srila Prabhupada, remembering Prabhupada like that, through the early devotees. They were so fortunate to have that personal experience, and we're so fortunate to actually have them giving that information of how Prabhupada dealt with them to us, because they pass it on. And hopefully that'll be passed on for generations and generations for the next 10,000 years to build that wonderful character that Srila Prabhupada was and is. It's interesting, you know, Prabhupada, in one of them, which was so interesting, I thought this was so relevant. Prabhupada, I can't remember the devotee's name, but he was saying that Prabhupada went to the place where they were doing the first murtis of Srila Prabhupada, where they were carving and making the first murtis of Srila Prabhupada. And Prabhupada was so pleased, and he said, "So, now I will be with you forever." And they thought, "Wow, Prabhupada." He said, "Yes, I will be with you forever." And this is one thing that I realized when we first got the murti here of Srila Prabhupada. Prior to that, we had a picture of Srila Prabhupada on the altar. That Prabhupada is really here with us. And then the devotee said, "Prabhupada, I hope you'll always stay with us. How will you also stay with us, Srila Prabhupada?" And Prabhupada said, "I will be with you in your dreams." Prabhupada said that. That actually, if you have a dream of Prabhupada, the Prabhupada will be there. So all of us, hopefully, have a dream of Prabhupada. So Prabhupada individually will come in your dream and guide and direct you. When I heard that, I thought, wow, that is so wonderful. Because many years ago, I almost forgot, actually. Many years ago, I had a dream of Prabhupada and he was rubbing my head. I thought, wow, that's so far out. But then I sort of forgot. But then when I heard that devotee say that Prabhupada told him that I will be in your dream, I thought, wow, Prabhupada actually came to me and connected. So this is an amazing realization. So these remembrances of Srila Prabhupada, that series, is so important. It's so wonderful that people can get that. So the next one that Prabhupada mentions here is the waterless rivers represent atheists who give us trouble in this world. So the materialists, the gross materialists, and some of us did this, accept empty philosophies of life from atheists, different gurus and sadhus and stuff. No concern for other, so it fits my life, my lifestyle. You know, abortion, there's no life there, so that can be killed. If you have an atheist sort of point of view, there's no life there. We can just abort the fetus. The ramifications for that, obviously, as is pointed out here, Prabhupada says, gives us trouble in this world and in the next. You're committing murder. So many murders are going on a regular basis, slaughtering innocent children that are unborn. The other one is the theory of evolution. You know, thinking that we all come from animals. You know, that whole theory, or the Big Bang theory, that actually nothing, everything came from nothing. That all of a sudden there was just a Big Bang. And that everything is happening just by chance, that there is no God. For a materialist, this is a wonderful sort of situation. A wonderful thing to think. But it's not factual. And ultimately, Prabhupada says, this will cause trouble both in this world and in the next. The next one that Prabhupada mentions is the meat-eating demons are our government officials, our politicians. And I'm dealing with them, so I don't want them to read this. Our meat-eating demons, the politicians. The politicians drain one hard-earned income by taxes. Let's tax them. And another tax, and one more, and GST, and this thing and that thing. And we're ruling and controlling our lives. Who knows, who's aware of the government controlling our lives? We're sitting here with masks on.
Wear a mask.
Imposing restrictions. You know, you can't do this, you can't do this. So these, Prabhupada says, that these are the meat-eating demons and the government officials. There's some really nice people as well, I have to say. During the coronavirus, I've had a lot of interrelationships with people from DHHS and from the government, especially Martin Foley, who is our representative in this area. He's actually a very sincere person. He comes to the temple all the time, and he's a strict vegetarian. He goes to India. So he's the health minister at the moment. So again, wonderful person. There are many people, and so we take it at face value, you know, that there are wonderful people as well. The next one that Prabhupada mentions is, and the pricking thorns are the impediments of material life. Pricking thorns. Pricking thorns are those accidents that happen to us. Illnesses that constantly harass us and stop the materialist from enjoyment. Oh, why do I have to have this flu? Why do I have to have this sickness, you know? Why are there all these viruses and lockdowns? I want to enjoy. What the heck is going on here? So the materialist is disturbed by that. It's an impediment to their material life, to their enjoyment. The next one, Prabhupada says, the little taste experienced in sex is our desire to enjoy another's wife or husband. Again, politically correct, it's both wife and husband. So that mentality of the gross materialist is, let me have whatever and whoever I want to satisfy my lusty urges, irrespective of the consequences, whether there's family breakdowns or whatever, divorce, you know, or having an affair. I just want to enjoy and I don't care for the ramifications. Did you know, actually, that within Krishna consciousness, I don't know what the situation is now, but in Krishna consciousness, the divorce rate is higher than of the materialists. So there's something not quite right there as well that we have to look at. The next one Prabhupada mentions, and the flies are the guardians of women and men, like husbands, father-in-laws, mother-in-laws, and so on. Who in married life, not that many grihasthas, might be grihasthas out there, have found that there is a difficulty with in-laws. Can be. So they are an harassment to one's enjoyment. Oh, we have to look after Ma. Ma has a little bit of dementia. My mother used to say, she's Dutch, and she used to say, oh, they're having dementia. So dementia and Alzheimer's, and we have to look after Ma. Now, for a gross materialist who hasn't got a concept of looking after one's parents, this is an impediment. What the hell now? You know, now I have to look after this person. You know, it's stopping my enjoyment. So let's lock them away in an old people's home. Yeah, that's it. And then you forget. Let's just put them away. You know, before I became a devotee, this is actually what drove me to become a devotee, to really hear the philosophy. I was working at a retirement home, an old people's home. And I could see how they were completely abandoned by their children. So many of the people that are in retirement homes are completely abandoned, totally forgotten by their children. They're left there to sit there and just wait until they die. And I thought, like, there is no way that I hope that I never have to go through this. It was such an eye-opener for me, and it was at that stage that I became involved in Krishna consciousness. It was really interesting that after we did become a Hare Krishna devotee and I gave up that work, I was subcontracting to do cleaning at a retirement home like that. And I would see old people just withering with no contact with their family at all. So Bhakti and I used to go down there and we used to chant for these old people. And it was such an upliftment for them. They really enjoyed it. It was really amazing. And it made such an impact on me for both of us when we came to Krishna consciousness. So the next one that Prabhupada said, the creeper itself is women and men in general. So it applies to both. The reason is attachment. Always wanting to be completely captured or clinging to another. I only exist if I have my wife or my husband. What will I do if they're gone? You know? How will I manage? It's a really interesting thing. This possessiveness, for the gross materialist, to have a life partner is like possessiveness. Now I have you, you're mine. You're my possession. Really a horrible situation, because that tendency leads to family violence, which is the number one problem in today's society. So many times, I think it's 3 a week or something, some incredible amount of women that actually die are being murdered by their partner or loved one, so-called loved one, their life partner, because of family violence. You know, that they somehow or other feel, you're my property. You can't leave. You can't just walk out on me. If you leave, I'll kill you and I'll kill the children too. And this is what happens. So this is that creeper itself. I'll leave you. And then the next one is, the lion is the wheel of time, ferocious time. So we're nearly through them. Ferocious time. No ability to do the things I want to do in the space of time. You know, you've heard that saying, I've got my bucket list. I want to do these things before I pass away. So a materialist, a gross materialist, has this list. I've got to do these things. And they're completely upset when they don't have the opportunity to fulfill those desires, because death ultimately comes. The heron and crows and vultures are so-called demigods, and the misery inflicted on them. Too hot, too cold, too warm, too sleep. And the gross materialist is constantly complaining. They can never be happy. Sometimes you have devotees a little bit like that too. Oh, it's so cold. Oh, it's so cold, Prabhu. Then, oh, it's so hot, Prabhu. It's never happy. You know, it's always something. Constantly complaining. The next one is pseudo-swamis, yogis, and incarnations. And who hasn't been, the gross materialist, affected by them? Oh, do they love the yogis and the bogies and the complete pseudo-swamis. Yes, please tell me that I'm God. That fulfills everything. I knew it. I'm so important. I'm God. I can enjoy anything I like. No, I'm not answerable to anyone. You know, I'm the Lord of all I survey. Nothing can be more important than me. And then finally, all these are too insignificant to give one relief. And then Prabhupada mentions the swans are the perfect brahmanas, those saintly people in our community. Finally, the devotees of the Lord, the gross materialist, feels like this. But I'm bent on selfish enjoyment and I'll avoid them at all costs. You know, you ever seen them when you go on Harinam? You're doing on Harinam and all of a sudden you see somebody coming, they see the Harinam and they cross the road. Oh God, I don't want to have anything to do with them. Or they put their fingers in their ears or something like that, you know. So here's another example, you know, of wanting to get away from spiritual life. It was interesting, in one of those Prabhupada remembrances again, this one devoted lady, Ananda Manjari, she was saying how there was this lady who was a devotee whose mother was so antagonistic towards the devotees. And she was one of those ones that if you're starting to chant, she would block her ears like this, right? So she was dying, and Nanga Manjari was saying to Prabhupada, when she was dying, Srila Prabhupada, she said to everybody around us, so where is your Krishna now? Where is your Krishna? And she died.
Oh.
Right? On her deathbed, she was saying, you know, so where is your Krishna now? And where is your Krishna? And when she told Prabhupada, Prabhupada's eyes lit up. She went to Krishna. So this is the mercy of Krishna. It's just amazing, you know. So many realizations. So the next one that Prabhupada says, and the monkeys are the extravagant sudras engaged in eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. Yes, these are the individuals I want to hang out with. They're the good time individuals. Eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. Let's just get out there and enjoy, folks. These are the dudism. Dudism, religion, ki jai. Let's just get out there and enjoy. Look it up, dudism. Good time. We go and enjoy. We go down to the pub. We go down to the nightclub. Not a care in the world. Let's just get out there and get out there. go to the footy, dope out on drugs, who cares, what else, you know? Life, we only have this one life, let's just enjoy it to the max. The trees of the monkeys are our households. This is the final one. Like-minded communities, birds of a feather flock together. You know, for a wealthy person, for a materialist, their gross desire is, I want a house in Toorak. I want a house in Beverly Hills. I want a house that's really, really prominent. So that's their thing. And then finally, Prabhupada says, and the elephant is the ultimate death. So there's that phrase that we've got, the elephant in the room, you know, that's the thing that we don't talk about. There's an elephant in the room. So Prabhupada made this analogy here, the elephant is the ultimate death. So death is, I don't want to die, I want to enjoy, damn it, I'm going to have to die. There's nothing you can do about it. That's the elephant in the room. So then the materialist thinks, I know what I'll do. I'll freeze this body. And then if I freeze this body, then at some time science will be so good that they can revive me and I can get back in there and enjoy it. Or I can get different parts of the body, another heart or whatever. So this is their illusion. Thus all the constituents of material existence are described in this chapter. This was such a powerful chapter. So powerful. And if we learn from it, we can conclude from this chapter that the bona fide scriptures are our auto-correct device. When we read the scriptures, when we're in contact with devotees and they're instructing us, they guide us. It's either through guru, sadhu or shastra. They're the auto-correct. Put us back in line. Put us back into the path. By their association and constant education and connection, we're able to traverse this forest of material existence. The Srimad Bhagavatam 7.9.25 declares the material body to be ashesha rujam viroha, the breeding place of unlimited diseases and miseries. That's the material world, folks. And the Bhagavad Gita says, and declares in 8.15, the material world is dukhalayam ashashvatam, a place of misery where little happiness may be, where the little happiness we may achieve is stripped away due to the temporary nature. The book Bhagavatam and the personality Bhagavatam are the essential messages. Not pessimistic, they are optimistic. They point us to the spirit world. They point us to the spiritual world where we as eternal spirit souls can reclaim our real identity, our everlasting happiness. The scriptures proclaim the true nature of this world as a place of misery. Now there's an example that I want to give from my service in chaplaincy in the hospitals. Sometimes there may be a person that's diagnosed with a curable cancer, okay? So this has happened so often when we're there that they get a curable cancer. But it's only through, they're only cured through heavy chemotherapy, okay? So the patient is initially be disturbed when told about the severe illness. So, you know, the doctor comes in and they tell them, and they report that to me. But may become ready for treatment when clearly told about the two choices. So the doctor comes in and says, well, there's this chemotherapy which could help with this cancer that you've got. And that's the one alternative. The other alternative, my friend, is excruciating and gradually inevitable death, pain and death. So when faced with a great problem like that, the way to the best case result often being that they have to have a hard look at the situation. They have to have a really hard look and look at the worst case scenario, right? So, okay, you know, I'm just going to... Because chemotherapy is not a joke either. It's not pleasant. If you know someone that has gone through chemotherapy, it's quite painful. So, through the story of Maharaj Bharat, it's explained that presently all of us are diseased. Each and every one of us in this material world has got a disease. We are eternal souls afflicted with this amnesia, and we're captured in this material world. It's just been described how suffering goes on in this material world. Though we are entitled as spirit souls to be blissful, everlasting life of devotional service to God. That's our right. But due to misidentification with this temporary material body, we have to suffer unnecessarily the miseries and the horrors of material existence through old age, disease, death, rebirth, again and again and again. To cure ourselves, requires spiritual therapy, a Krishna conscious cure, like the holy name, saintly devotees around us having that association, sacred scriptures, the beautiful deities that we have here in Melbourne Temple, the sanctified remnants of food through prasadam. All these things are the cure. Unlike chemotherapy, which is painful from the beginning and the end, it's not pleasant to have. The spiritual therapy seems to be painful in the beginning, but turns out to be joyful after a little practice. What's the verse in Bhagavad Gita that actually says that? It was painful in the beginning, but joyful at the end. Does anybody know that verse? Huh? It's chapter 18, text 37. I don't know the verse, but I'll read it out to you. Yad tat agre visham iva parimam mrito pamam tat sukham satvikam proptam atma buddhi prasadajam. Excuse my poor Sanskrit. That which in the beginning may be just like poison, but at the end is just like nectar, and which awakens one to self-realization, is said to be the happiness and the mode of goodness. And Prabhupada says here, and this purport is so pertinent to this section of Bhagavatam. In pursuit of self-realization, one has to follow many rules and regulations to control the mind and the senses and to concentrate the mind on the self. All these procedures are very difficult, bitter like poison. But if one is successful in following the regulations and comes to the transcendental position, he begins to drink real nectar and enjoy life. Really enjoy life. And that's the point of Krishna consciousness. The living entity's duty, therefore, is to develop God consciousness, so that at the end of life, one has the opportunity to achieve the spiritual world. So how do we do that? One has to focus. One cannot be anywhere else. One has to focus solely on Krishna. And if you focus on Krishna, then you'll be able to recognize your spiritual nature. And that's why we come back to this material forest, because we can't focus enough. At the time of death, only the tendencies of an individual remain. Now, tendency, I looked this up, the meaning of tendency is the presumptive course of future behavior in continuation of observed acts and attitudes. So it's how you are, what your tendency is, what your feelings are. Long-term ingrained commitments to a process. That's a tendency. So just like during sleep, it's difficult to control the thinking process. You notice that? That if you're asleep, you can't control your dreams. It's really difficult to control your dreams. You have the weirdest dreams. You can't control them, can you? Our dreams are a result of our tendencies. And that's clearly there. If you watch a horror movie or something before you go to sleep, you'll have difficulty sleeping and you'll have nightmares and so on and so forth. You see something horrible. That's why Prabhupada often recommends that if you want a peaceful night's sleep, you read Krishna book before you go to bed, and then you'll dream of Krishna. So the tendencies or feelings after death become more prominent. That's why it's very important that during one's life, one has to purify one's tendencies, one's feelings, have to purify them. When one does not have excessive passion or attachments, which is what we've been going through by the gross materialists, one can navigate the subtle realms of the afterlife without fear. Lord Krishna states in Bhagavad Gita 8.6, whatever state one remembers upon quitting the body, that state he will attain without fail. This is what happens before quitting the body. One has to control the thoughts due to the function of the brain to have logical thinking. So while we have a brain, we can logically think things through. But what happens is that once a person quits the body, one is moved only by one's tendencies. one's feelings. There's no more interaction of the brain. It's all about how you set up your life. And whatever one remembers last becomes motive, therefore. It becomes the motive of the trajectory. That is why if one can remember Krishna, one will be able to have a life related to Krishna consciousness later in life. Completely. And it's best to remember Krishna's holy name. This is what's always been stated. Since the holy name represents the Lord completely. So Harinam, 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 Eva Kevalam, Kalamana, Stevana, Stevana, Stevana. There's no other way. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. And Prabhupada actually mentions that one of the tricks to actually becoming very Krishna conscious is that before you go to sleep at night time, chant the Maha Mantra. Try this. This is an experiment you can try if you don't do it already. Instead of just dropping off to sleep, before you go to sleep, you actually chant the mantra in your mind. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Boom. Sleep. Prabhupada says that if you have that experience, that if you chant before you go to sleep, chances are that when you wake up, you'll also be chanting Hare Krishna. So that's exactly your training, your body, before you pass away, because it's death is like sleep. It's everything is shutting down. So if over your life you've been practicing this, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare, and you go to sleep, which you will, in the morning you'll wake up and you'll chant Hare Krishna again. If that's done at the time of your death, then when you wake up, you're there with Krishna. That's the key. But you have to have that tendency, you have to have that ability, that feeling to be able to do that. So that's what a really nice point. So just remember Krishna before dying, and surely remember him thereafter as well. This is what we've learned from the great devotees like Maharaj Bharat's example. He's a great example of that, where he went through those different lifetimes and finally gave up and went back, going back to Godhead. So it's healthy to have a somewhat pessimistic attitude towards life. It's healthy. And from Krishna consciousness, we can't help but be, in the same token, very optimistic and very grateful for everything that we've got. You know, when you have that pessimism about material life and then you see what you've got as a devotee and what you've been given, the gifts that you've been given by Sadhu and Krishna and Shastra, you become exceptionally grateful, because then you view the world not in a selfish, motivated way, not in a materialistic way as it's described here in the report, but you see it in the eyes of Shastra, or Shastra Chakshush. You're able to see the world as it really is in appreciation. You see a beautiful thing and you don't see, oh, I want to enjoy that beautiful thing. You see that thing because you understand it belongs to Krishna. When you see a beautiful sunrise, you say, how wonderful is Krishna. When you see a beautiful flower, you say, how wonderful is Krishna. When you see a beautiful woman or a man, you say, how wonderful is Krishna. Everything belongs to Krishna. And that, with that attitude, you become grateful and appreciative. And that's the tendency. That's that tendency. That's that feeling. To have that gratitude throughout your life. To perceive that. And that's only done by following rigorously and staying on track. And every now and again there may be a little, oh, hang on a tick, back over here. Back up again. Like that. That autocorrect. So we have to be really grateful for great devotees like Bharat Maharaj. As the actual verse was giving a eulogy to Bharat Maharaj and a thank you for giving us this knowledge. So this is a great thing. So Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Bharat Maharaj ki, Srila Prabhupada ki. Thank you very much, Prabhu. Are there any comments or questions at all? Yes, Prabhu. Have we got a microphone? Are we done? Do you want to just use this one? Actually, you know, I could Every morning I listen to class when I'm doing my painting in the studio. And it would be really good if you could have that ready just before the question time, you know, before the class is finished. Because sometimes I really like to hear the questions that the devotees are giving and you can't make it out. So if you could do that, that'd be really good to have the microphone ready. Okay? Prabhu? Did he catch that? Okay. Thanks, Prabhu. Yeah. What's your question?
The analogy of the bringing back on track was like very appropriate and striking. Thank you. The question is, the whole theme of this first material enjoyment is to get out and be detached and all that. But if we see the philosophy or the result of reading this, it promises that you will get opulence, you will emerge into the Brahman or whatever. Like the result of reading all this seems to be contradicting the message that the whole episode is trying to teach. Like, do you have any thoughts on that?
Did you see that? If you read that before, Prabhupada actually points it out, which is interesting. Where are we? Prabhupada actually points it out in there. Then Prabhupada actually says that you can attain all desires. Where is it? If one sufficiently hears the chanting of the name, one becomes very famous. It must be in the purport as well. Oh yeah, here, the forest materialist, this is to summarise, da-da-da. No, I'm sorry, but I can't find it at the moment. But yeah, basically speaking, you know, it's there, you know, but for a devotee, we're only interested in those things that will actually help us to go back home, back to Godhead. We take that message of Bharat Maharaj. Somebody may see that as worship of him will give me material benefits, but that's not our goal at all. You know, for us, the instructions the lives of Bharat Maharaj are for our benefit to learn and to really be on guard, not to go down the track of materialism, and to be really conscious and really aware that we only have, or we don't only have, but we have this opportunity in this lifetime to make such advancement by hearing the purports and the discussions that are being had here. So you don't take that whimsically, you just really take it to heart. Human life is just such a fleeting thing. You know, it's only by the grace of Krishna that we are having this opportunity to become Krishna conscious. Gross materialists may end up in a hellish situation, and that hellish situation is an animal birth, you know, and then he or she has to wait many, many cycles before coming back to a human form of life where he gets that opportunity again. Bharat Maharaj was an exception that he had to take on that human form, but that animal form, but he remembered, which was a special gift that was given to him. But no, I don't see that that's too much of a problem.
Good.
Yeah, Bhakti.
I think mine is more I think Prabhu was more trying to address the issue that, you know, if a devotee practices sincerely, then all things come to him, you know, without requesting.
Yeah.
You know, so wealth comes and fame comes and things like that. And they're just the things that you're trying to avoid getting because you don't want to be entangled. So I think Prabhu was trying to say, well, it's contrary, right? So, the thing is that because you're practicing sincerely, you will not be attached to these things that come to you naturally, because you will also be developing yourself spiritually to such an extent where you will not be interested to utilize these things in a material way. You will utilize them in Krishna service.
Yeah.
So then there's no attachment anyway, because you utilize them in Krishna service.
So if wealth comes, great, we'll use it in Krishna service. You know? I wonder if I should tell you this. I guess I can. Most of you know that I'm working on this project, which is doing these paintings and the exhibition of the Bhagavad Gita. It's going to cost a lot of money to do. So at one point I thought, okay, I'm going to actually go on TV and go on to one of these shows and see if I can win some money so I can, you know, do this project. So I thought, you know, again, I took it in my own sort of direction instead of relying on Krishna, and Krishna will provide, because he always has through our life. So I thought, okay, I'll go on the millionaire hot seat. And so this week, that episode of Millionaire Hot Seat was on TV. I didn't win anything. But the beauty of it was is that at least I thought, well, if I'm going on there, I'm going on as a devotee. And whoever watches will at least hear about devotional service and Krishna consciousness. So that happened. Although I didn't win anything, I still had an opportunity to preach, which was a really interesting. And so many of my family said, oh, I saw you on TV, you know. But that wasn't the issue. Again, I wanted funding, I wanted money to do this project for Krishna. I've got no attraction for money. But you know, if I could do that, that would be interesting. So I had to make that clear to everybody that I went on there because I wanted to do this project, and that project was me. But I have to leave it up to Krishna, and Krishna will provide. He has for the whole of our life always provided. Even, you know, like my car broke down and I thought, well, what am I going to do, you know? And by Krishna's mercy, this auto-correct car that was presented to me by the temple. You need a car for your service, and so we'll give you a brand new car. Well, even for a materialist, it's like, yeah, I'm striving to get my new car, I'm striving to get my new car, but for a devotee, there it is, you need it. So whatever comes will come, you know. But yeah, so, but I didn't win anything. But it was interesting, actually. I had a talk with Eddie. You know, everybody know Eddie McGuire?
Yeah.
He's the host of that show. And there are a lot of things that were actually cut as well. And we've got a plug-in for Gopal's. Did you see it? Have you seen it? No?
Yeah,
no,
I got a message from CEO of the Port Phillip Community Group.
Oh, yeah.
Saying, oh, now you guys are the TV now.
Yeah. All my interfaith people also. Oh, I saw it on TV. Anyway, and... yeah, but I had a good... A lot of it was cut, but a lot of it was there, you know, and I had an opportunity. He was saying, you know, oh, so the Hare Krishna is still around? I said, yeah, you're still here. Oh, I used to remember when I go to the movies, you know, the Hare Krishnas were there dancing and chanting in the street. And I said, we still do. We're still there every Tuesday and Friday. We're out there chanting in the streets, you know. And yeah, no, I used to go to this restaurant. I said, yeah, Gopal's. Gopal's restaurant. You know, Swanson Street in the city. No, we're still there, and it's still a number one restaurant, you know. I was sort of having it up with him. And I said, actually, I started that restaurant. No, you didn't. Did you start that restaurant? You know, I said, yeah, yeah. Devotees, we've been serving prasadam there. And we do a lot of philanthropic work as well, you know. And then I was talking about Food for Life, and they cut that. And then the other thing he said was, this was really interesting, one of the other things which was also cut, we were talking further about Gopal's, and he said, yeah, you know, I went to Gopal's. And he said, we were just footy people, you know, we went past the restaurant, we thought, oh, let's go and check out these Haris. And they went upstairs, and they did, because at that stage, he said, you know, you had some bad reputation at that stage. And I said, we were just misunderstood. You know, people just didn't know us, but now they know us. So he said, so we went up there and we had something to eat, and it was really nice, he said. And he said, but the thing that really attracted me was there was an English guy there, and he said, I started talking about Manchester Football Club, and this English person, devotee, was right into telling me all about the Manchester Football Club and encouraging me and all this kind of stuff. I thought, oh, wow, that's Korma. And Korma was encouraging him, like, you know, we do when we preach to someone, we find out what a person's interest is and just be appreciative of the way they deal with that thing that they're attached to. And in a very nice way, you play along with it, but in the ultimate end, he remembered that this was a Hare Krishna who was nice to him and was supporting him. Instead of, you know, Korma saying, you know, oh, what, you're preparing for some football team, you should be thinking of Krishna. He was actually developing him. And to this day, that was 30 years ago. So all he has is memories of the devotees in a favorable light because of Korma. And the prasadam. And he loved the prasadam. I said, so anyway, after I bombed out, that's a really strange question. Anyway, afterwards, I talked to him behind the cameras and everything. I said, listen, Eddie, if you ever want to come, let me know. And, you know, we'll make arrangements that you can have a really nice meal at Gopal's again with your wife, perhaps. And he said, yeah, no, I'd like that, but if you can do a wrestling. So there's a connection there. So then, although I didn't achieve the goal that I wanted to do, I mean, and honestly, maybe it was a bit... you know, whimsical that I did that. But I thought, what the heck? That's what happened. So anyway, yes, for real. Oh, that is it. Sorry.
I was going to say, if you get the app for 9 now, you get one for sure.
Yeah. I don't want to watch it anymore.
9 now.
Don't watch it. It's not worth it. Just big buck that are walking around the studio. You know, it's not. Yes, for real.
As a hurdle for enjoyment, it's stopped now because people are not able to walk and enjoy. They're frustrated now.
Oh yeah.
Do you think after? So do you think once the pandemic goes away, once will the enjoyment, the tendency to enjoy more will increase or will it decrease?
Oh yeah. You saw it from the last lockdown. There was a resurgence in people going to the restaurants and going to pubs and everything, and the football. They had huge crowds at the football. People were just sitting at the door going, I'm going to go out, I'm going to go. Yay, we're out! You know, enjoyment, I want to enjoy, you know. So yeah. But they're enjoying at home as well. They're trying to enjoy at home as well. You know, through Netflix, through this thing, through that thing. You know, they're somehow or other, they're still satisfying their materialistic desire for enjoyment.
But now we can see the frustration from
frustrated.
You know, we can very clearly say that people are frustrated. They don't want to be sitting at home at all, and they don't like the current
stress. We've been dealing on through our chaplaincy, because we can't even go to people that are you know, sick in bed and everything. So we've been dealing with home violence, family violence, depression, suicide tendencies, where this frustration for material enjoyment is so strong that they want to actually, you know, they do some horrible things. And so we need to counsel them and talk them down and refer them to places like Lifeline and, you know, things like that. So, yeah, people are frustrated. But they're always going to be frustrated. If it's not COVID-19, it's something else. And that's the instruction in the Bhagavatam. It's all those different things. It's just over and over again, just frustration for trying to endure materially. We don't need it. Just be spiritually absorbed and you'll be happy. And just see this as a auto-direct, just correction. If we feel that we're going off the track a little bit. It's really important. Prabhu, thank you very much. It was wonderful to speak to you again. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Ki jai.